And at the same time, the Buddha is clearly a very kind man. We'll come on to this again, but one of the aspects of this is that people feel sometimes, when he comes towards them, that it's as if they're absorbed in a sort of a force field of loving kindness. There are a few stories about this in the monastic code text called the Vinaya, that the Buddha just extends this metta, loving kindness, and suddenly all of their reactions and their irritation with him is dissolved, and a sort of communication takes place. The other story that's quite well known is how he tames a wild elephant through radiating loving kindness. And there are stories of monks, even in modern times, when they're in the jungle and a tiger comes up to them, they radiate kindness and it seems to work. The tiger doesn't eat them. Of course, we only have stories from the ones who didn't get eaten. So we have this sense of the Buddha being able to show a kind of loving aspect to himself. And this business about not wanting hassle, not wanting bother, becomes a principle that he builds into the way his disciples are to interact with their peers in the community, in the world of shramanas. They're the wandering holy men of whom the Buddha was one initially. The Buddha sometimes parodies what went on in those communities. They loved arguing. They loved debating. You don't understand this teaching and discipline. I do. How could you understand it? Your practice is quite wrong. Mine is right. What I say can be backed up. Yours can't. Yada, yada, yada. That's essentially what's going on. And they love to talk, the shramanas, according to the texts. But when the Buddha comes, they know that he likes quiet. And he doesn't delight in disputes. So sometimes they tell each other to be quiet. And they say, no, we should greet him respectfully, we should stop chattering away. And sometimes they don't. And there are stories of people saying, I'm going to have a go at that Buddha, that Gotama, because I'm going to drag him round by the hair, I'm going to bounce him off the floor, because he is wrong, I'm going to beat him in dispute. No one ever does, of course. And some think, because he isn't willing to engage in debates, he's weak. The ascetic Gotama's wisdom has been destroyed by his solitary life. He is unused to gatherings and no good at conversation. He's out of touch, like a bison that circles around the herd but stays at the edge. If Gotama were to join us, this is one group of shramanas, we could confound him with a single question. What the Buddha actually does is to practice what we could call kindly and skillful speech. Now he says of himself, of the people he met and in his communication, I matched my appearance to their appearance. I matched the sound of my voice to the sound of theirs. I instructed them with talk about the teaching, encouraging, enthusing, and inspiring them. This isn't the only way to teach, but this is the way the Buddha chose to teach. I matched my appearance to their appearance. If someone's sitting down, he sits down. They're standing up, he stands up. He's establishing rapport. I matched the sound of my voice to the sound of their voice. That's quite a subtle level of communication skills going on there. I instructed them with talk about the teaching. He doesn't get involved in saying why they're wrong. He says what he believes to be the truth, encouraging, enthusing, and inspiring them. So when the Buddha meets people, very often what he does, rather than getting involved in a tit-for-tat argument, and this I think is something that we could or reflect on and learn from. He tries to understand the way the other person thinks. He tries to see what is valuable for them. Usually people in this world just come out, you know, very forthright. This is what I believe. If they believe in exciting mystical experiences as a result of meditation, he goes, oh, okay, great. But what is the real point of it? If they're very taken with notions of caste purity and being an Aryan. He says, Aryan, that means noble, doesn't it? So what is really noble in life? Is it a matter of birth? He does this very much with the Brahmins. They're the priestly caste. So one Brahmin, Sonadanda, decides he will actually enter into discussion with the Buddha. Even though everyone tells him, no, These Shramanas, you shouldn't talk with them. You're the real expert on religious matters. He says, no, I will talk to him. But he's worried. Sonadanda's worried that the Buddha will ask him about all these sort of philosophical things that the Shramanas know about. The Brahmins don't know about that. They know how to perform sacrifices. But the Buddha doesn't do that. He asks him, well, what is a true Brahmin, really? And step by step, he leads him to the conclusion that being a Brahmin, which for Sonadanda is about being the most noble, holy, spiritual kind of person, fundamentally has nothing to do with birth, nothing to do with appearance, nothing to do with knowledge of the sacred mantras. In other words, nothing to do with any of the things that Sonadanda actually did and actually believed in, and was meant to believe in. So what he does, what the Buddha does again and again, is to accept the terms in which people think and find the inner meaning of them. So being a Brahmin, if that's about moral and spiritual qualities as well as a social role, being a Brahmin combines those two aspects, moral and spiritual qualities and a social status. And the Buddha inverts the way that people think, which is to emphasize that I'm a Brahmin because I was born a Brahmin, to find the inner meaning of it. So this is really quite remarkable as a level of communication, that people can come along with whatever is valuable to them, and you can find the universal aspect, the Buddha can find the universal aspect in whatever they have to say.